It's time to get inside the Giants home.
Let's go, let's go, let's go.
On Giants.com.
Like it, I like it, I like it.
And the Giants mobile app.
Boom, give me some juice.
Part of the Giants podcast network.
Let's roll.
Welcome to another edition of the Giants Huddle podcast brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. I am John Schmelk. It is our yearly reporters mock draft. And to lead us off are the Chicago Bears, selecting a one overall, then again a ninth overall. We'll get Tom Thayer, who is the radio analyst for the Bears, take on that selection as well. But Tom, the Bears are picking first in the best possible way. You didn't have to suffer through some type of brutal 1-16 season to get here, but you managed to get the Panthers picking the trade last year. So Bears are sitting pretty right now, man.
Yeah, but John, you know, in the NFL nowadays, a 7-win season is equally as bad as a 1-win season. And that's what we suffered through. And that's after a 3-win season the year before. So the Bears have put themselves in an interesting position by getting Carolina's pick and having number one overall in probably having a year when the most important position possible in the NFL is available. Then you have to take all three into consideration, or, you know, I guess the three that at the top. And I think it's hard to overlook Caleb Williams. And when you get the outside comparison of him to Patrick Mahomes, or he, even his own comparison to Aaron Rodgers, I don't think you can afford to pass him up. And I think by saying afford to pass him up because of Justin Fields getting onto a second contract, I don't think you could afford to pay him what a second contract to the quarterback position deserves in the NFL nowadays. So I think you get to reset that financial clock, pick Caleb Williams, and move forward with the other pieces in place that Ryan Poles has brought to this team through free agency.
Do you think the other quarterbacks in the mix here were even close to Caleb? Or do you think this was we finished watching the tape in January and we're pretty darn sure now before even meeting with the guys, doing all the other extraneous postseason stuff? Do you think just off the tape that they knew Caleb was the guy?
I don't think at the end of the season they thought it was a foregone conclusion that there's Caleb Williams and no looking back. I don't think if you did your due diligence, investigative work with a guy like Jaden Daniels or even what Drake May offers you, it would kind of be kind of naive in the approach to the importance of the position. However, when you look at a guy that hasn't thrown an interception on third and fourth down, if you look at what he's able to accomplish as a junior with a solid supporting cast and winning the Heisman Trophy, I think he's an interesting caliber of player that if you're a GM and you take him and he has success, then you got a job extension. If you take him and he's not successful, you may lose your job. And so you got yourself in a precarious position, but I really respect what Ryan Poles does in his investigative work that he does for behind the scenes type of looks that you have to do in a position of this importance. So I think it's Caleb Williams all the way, on Thursday, the 25th.
Does this make it, and this is kind of an aside question, just popped in my head. I know the Bears are working on trying to get a new stadium with the dome. Bringing a guy like Caleb Williams, is getting that dome on that building become even more of a priority for you guys?
Yes, no, but I think it's more Kevin Warren, the new president of the Chicago Bears, and he had firsthand experience of bringing in the stadium, the new stadium they built in Minnesota, and he understands what an asset like that means to the city itself, to the team, to what you can bring into the city on a year-round basis in terms of the Super Bowl, Big Ten Championship game, Final Four.
Concerts.
Wintertime. You know, they have 15,000 hotel rooms within a mile walkable distance to where the new location would be. So wow. I think more Kevin Warren plays a major role in trying to bring that stadium to the city than trying to satisfy Caleb Williams, because if they went out to Arlington Park and they built a new stadium out there, it would also be a dome stadium. So it's not necessarily Caleb, but they do want the best facility you can possibly offer the organization and the fans of the Bears.
Absolutely. All right. And then the Bears also selected 9 here, Tom. What do you think the Bears are hoping for there? Are they looking for a playmaker to put with Caleb? Maybe some more help up front, though. I think you guys are in pretty good shape at tackle based on what the offensive line looked like last year. Maybe a trade up. What do you think the Bears' thoughts are? And what are they hoping happens 1-8 so they have something available to them at 9 that they want?
So to me, number nine, I would have three priority picks. I would have like a Joe Alt, a Dallas Turner, or a Roman Odunze. If one of those guys were available, then I would be more than happy to take them, and they would complement Montez Sweat on the opposite of the defensive line, a premier left tackle for this offense, bringing in a new quarterback or a receiver to go along with Keenan Allen, DJ Williams, Cole Kmet, and Gerald Everett, the new tight end they signed this year. And if one of those guys were not available, then I would look to trade down and try to multiply my picks, because the Bears only have four picks going into the draft. So if you could turn that number nine pick into maybe two this year and one next year, I think that'd be an option that you'd have to explore.
Would you slide Malik Nabers into that group too, or are you just assuming he's not going to be there based on what you know?
I would keep him in that group, but I think that there's a couple of other receivers that are comparative to him that maybe that you can multiply your picks. So, but I like Malik Nabers. There's no doubt about it. And I like players that have played for Brian Kelly. Being a Notre Damer myself, Brian Kelly's got a reputation that he's a strict guy to play for. And I think when, if you play for a Jim Harbaugh, you play for a Brian Kelly, you get a little bit of that tough exterior offensive line coach that you're already used to when you come up to the NFL.
I'm trying to figure out when he might get drafted, because I think he's a great player. Do you think Brock Bowers would be in the conversation there? I know you guys have a pretty solid and good tight end room, but Brock Bowers is also a special playmaker. Do you think he might be in the mix there, or do you think not so much?
You know, I only don't, because they signed Cole Kmet to an extension last year. They just brought in Gerald Everett. They got a guy behind the scenes, Steven Carlson. So if you look at three tight ends, we already have them. If you're talking about bringing in a tight end in the first round, then you better be ready to play him a majority of the snaps per game. And I don't think that's the most emergency of needs for the Bears. I still think it's anywhere offensive line outside a right tackle still can help the receiver position, or either a dominating, tough three technique defensive tackle or a defensive end.
And you think, since they only have those four picks, not many on day three, that a trade up would probably be very unlikely?
Trade down, more likely of a scenario for there. If there's a guy that you say, okay, that's going to be still there in the low first round or early first round, I'd have to explore a couple of those kids as well.
Tom, great stuff, my friend. Always appreciate you joining us. Anything you want to promote, tell the folks where to find you.
I got no social media. I'm a ghost. So
good for you, man.
Me and you and I talking here is about as close as you can get.
I love it. Tom Thayer, he does a radio analyst for the Bears Radio Network. Tom, good stuff. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Tom Thayer. He selects Caleb Williams for the Chicago Bears. Now we transition to the Washington Commanders, who have a brand new staff, top to bottom, new ownership, the whole nine yards. And to join us to talk about what they might do with the second overall pick is their play-by-play man on the radio, Bram Weinstein. Bram, John Schmelk here. How you doing, man?
Hey, John. How are you?
Doing great. All right, so let's talk about it. You've had a lot of change there in the offseason, a new ownership group, new GM, new head coach. What has this process been from your point of view of how they've gone about trying to land on who the best fit here is at second overall?
So a lot of change is an understatement. Like, it's literally everything. The owners took over late in the process last year around July. They had promised they would let things play out literally throughout the building, from the front office to the coaching staff, business side, everything. And their fingerprints have kind of started to be put on the organization moving forward in a lot of different ways. They've hired, obviously, a new front office headed by Adam Peters. They were able to poach an assistant GM from the Lions and Lance Newmark. They obviously hired Dan Quinn. They obviously hired a high level coordinator in Cliff Kingsbury. And then I won't even bore you with all the details of all the different roles that they're filling that kind of weren't here in Washington in the past. So it's all extremely different. And I'll tell you this too, very tight-lipped. Like, we've been guessing for weeks about what they're going to do at number two.
So I guess that's my next question then. Even at this point, we're recording this exactly a week before the draft on a Tuesday. This will post in a couple days. What's your level of confidence even now? Like, the stuff that's come out seems to now be leading towards Jaden Daniels, but I wonder if that's just people repeating the same really unsourced guess, or if that's really sore stuff. Like, what is your level of confidence even at this point, so close to the draft?
I mean, so I'll just put it this way. Like, when I, you know, study the players, I think they're going to pick Jaden Daniels. Most of the scouts around the league, as you mentioned, kind of point towards it's going to be very hard for them to turn that down. The only thing that kind of hangs like in the balance here is fit for the offense. Cliff Kingsbury is going to run some version of the air raid offense. When Drake May, not last year, but the year before, worked under Phil Longo at North Carolina, he ran the air raid offense. So there's like a specific fit for Drake May. I know they sincerely like JJ McCarthy. They brought him in for one of their top 30 visits. I don't believe that is the direction they will go, but I'll go back to what I said before. They've been extremely tight-lipped. I'm not 100% about anything. I'm more 50-50 between May and Daniels, but I am leaning Daniels, and I do believe that's the direction they'll go.
Talk about the relationship of how the Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury thing is going to work here, because I think it's interesting. You have the offensive coordinator. I'm assuming he's going to have a big role in selecting the quarterback, especially since the head coach is a defensive guy. But I think the head coach is a defensive guy brings a different perspective, because he'll be able to give input as to how difficult it'll be to game plan against that specific quarterback, right? So talk a little bit about that dynamic and how you think that's going
to
work.
We're kind of waiting to see how it works out. Obviously, our last coach was defensive coach too. He had two different offensive coordinators over the 4 years and largely let them run the offense, maybe a little bit to his detriment last year with the amount of power that was given to Eric Bieniemy, and that's the past, and you probably don't want to hear that story now because it's, you know, far in the past. But he did so with Scott Turner too, as his original offensive coordinator. He gave them a lot of autonomy. We just don't know at this point. I mean, they haven't practiced yet. Dan Quinn in his press conferences and media availabilities talks about how Cliff Kingsbury is going to have also a tremendous amount of autonomy, but will this coach put his finger a little bit more on the scales than Ron Rivera did on that side of the ball? I think we have to kind of wait and see. I agree with you that Kingsbury is going to have a lot of say in who the selection ultimately is. But Dan Quinn has made a point of saying in this second go around as the head coach that one of the lessons he learned from his stint in Atlanta was he put too much on his plate and he needs to rely on others. And the belief is that the front office, the general manager, is ultimately the one who's going to make the choice here, kind of regardless of what the opinions are of the coaches. So they're all meeting, but there is a delineation of order here that hasn't been here in a long time. The front office does the front office stuff. The head coach does the head coach stuff. The coordinators do the coordinator stuff. And that's kind of the triangle of power that's being built here.
And look, when you're picking a quarterback, to your point, you've talked about fit a little bit, but if you're the general manager, look, what happens if Cliff Kingsbury has a great year? He gets hired as a head coach next year, right? And then the system changes. You almost need to just pick the best player, right? Because you don't know how long the system's going to be here if you're Adam Peters, right?
Yes, there's a fear. Obviously, with the hiring of Kingsbury, if things go well, especially with a young quarterback, like say Washington lucks into, we've got C.J. Stroud of 2024, then all of a sudden Cliff Kingsbury walks into a situation where he is wanted again around the league and leaves. They seem to have thought this through. One of the most underrated hirings of the offseason was Brian Johnson, the former offensive coordinator in Philadelphia, who is working literally below Cliff Kingsbury and is expected to work hands-on with the new quarterback that they get. And it feels logical that if Kingsbury were to leave within a year or two, that he would ascend up the chain.
All right, so let's make the pick, and then I'll have a couple of follow-ups. I think you already hinted at it here. The Washington Commanders with the second overall pick in our 2024 Reporters Mock Draft. They select
Jaden Daniels, quarterback, LSU, Heisman winner, second time they've done it in 10 years, first time since RG3.
All right, couple, and this is exciting for Washington. They've been literally trying to find a quarterback since Mark Rippon, and I understand that's, and I guess RG3 was, I know Kirk Cousins was kind of in there in the interim part, but for a guy that's going to be there for a long, long time. Couple quick ones. If Caleb Williams somehow gets the number two, you would think that's the pick, correct?
I think the card gets run up to the stage as fast as possible. Caleb Williams, one, is from Washington, D.C., has stated he would be happy to play here. We don't expect that. Obviously, we don't expect that to happen. I've been secretly hoping all along, and I think a lot of people in this area have, that for some reason the Bears fall in love with somebody else.
Yeah, unlikely. I agree. Any thought of a trade down slash non-quarterback here, or is this fait accompli?
Yes, I think there is. They've never closed the door on it. I don't believe that's the direction they're going to go. And the second that they traded Sam Howell kind of told you that they're going to take a quarterback. If they get overwhelmed with an offer from, say, Minnesota or the Raiders, who seem to be the most likely candidates to try to overwhelm a team, then I guess it's possible, but I really don't believe it's going to happen. And I think the deal would have to be so grandiose they can't turn it down.
And then finally, it sounds like this is pretty close, right? Like, no quarterback has run away with this. You mentioned they like J.J. McCarthy, Daniels in May. It seems like these guys, and this seems to be the case with most of the league too, that these quarterbacks are all pretty well liked.
Yes. You know, it's been interesting throughout this process, like, especially with where Caleb, all of a sudden the Bears kind of landed on Caleb Williams, and that was just kind of it. So we're the pivot point of the draft, and we're the ones that have to make a decision. Daniels and May are very different players from a skill set. And, you know, like, all along, I think it gets easier if you get a red flag on somebody and you get the smoke out there that, like, this guy's work ethic, or this guy's this thing, or this guy's that, got that problem. You don't hear that about either one of them, or McCarthy for that matter. You don't hear it about Penix either. Like, there's been none of that this year. Sometimes that kind of clears the way for everybody to go, okay, I think we're making the right decision because we're getting the person that we want. It doesn't feel like that there's an issue with any of these players. And so Adam Peters said this, the owner's meeting, when last time he met with the media before he has his pre-draft press conference later this week. And he said, and he just, like, in a moment of just complete honesty, he just kind of looked into one of the cameras and he said, this is a really big decision. And I think it's, like, weighing on him that this is not easy. It's not clear. And they have, it's a good problem. They have really, really, really good options. But as you know, just because you pick somebody high does not mean they're going to end up working out. And the chances of, let's just take May, Daniels, and Williams as the top three in some order, the chances of all three of them becoming great elite franchise quarterbacks is slim. So they're going to be measured by this decision. It's their first major decision in player personnel. They've done a lot in free agency with reshaping the roster, but they haven't made an impact signing yet. This is the first one that's going to happen. So this is a huge, it's an incredible opportunity to walk in and reshape the team. It's also a huge decision. And we're just hoping around here, because to your point, we haven't had a franchise quarterback in a long time, or one over any period of time, that we finally get it right.
No, absolutely. Final thing, and by the way, you throw McCarthy, odds are two of those four guys are going to fail in some way, shape, or form. If you look at just the math and the history of the NFL, two of those four guys are not going to work out. So you're right, and it's an inexact science. It's the toughest thing in sports to do is evaluate and draft quarterbacks. So it's a really tough decision. Finally, I thought what you guys did in free agency, Bram, was interesting. I just want to touch on that, because I know Giant fans try to keep track of the division. No star moves, to your point. They didn't, invest super big money in any one guy. They poached a lot of former Cowboys from Dan Quinn's time there, obviously. It seems like they're just trying to build kind of a baseline of a team full of solid players with solid guys trying to build a culture. Do I have that take fairly there?
Yes. And I think, the realization after last year was they had a lot of holes on the roster that needed to be filled. And, last year was interesting. When we went into the season, there were some number, it was like 20 to 25 players that were on expiring contracts, which is unusual. And so they went into the season knowing this would be the case. Once there was a change in ownership, I don't believe that anybody was in any mood or desire to try to extend anyone, because the key franchise players, Terry McLaurin, John Allen, Daron Payne, they were already under contract. They allowed the Chase Young and Montez Sweat situations play themselves out, Cam Curl too, to a lesser degree, but they let those play out. Everybody else, there really wasn't a name or a player that felt like that they needed to address before they go into the season. So they let it all play out. Obviously, the season didn't go very well, and there's a lot of change. Well, when Adam Peters walked in, half of his roster's not under contract. And so they were busy. They also walked in with the most cap room in the league. So they walked into a very unique situation. Most cap room, tons of expiring contracts, very few limiting contracts. Like, even their big ones don't look so big anymore comparative to what's happened around the league with Allen or Payne or McLaurin, and all this draft capital. And all of a sudden, they had a lot of work to do. So they were extremely busy, but I would describe it as aggressive, but disciplined. Like every single one of these deals that they signed, they're all short term with a few exceptions, but none of them really put any kind of lean on their cap at any point in time. Many of them are taking chances on players. Jeremy Chinn, if he could become what he was a couple of years ago in Carolina, great. But they only signed him to a one-year deal. Bobby Wagner, one-year deal. They had to reshape their offensive line. So they spent a little money on Tyler Biadasz from the Cowboys. But then they brought in Nick Allegretti from the Chiefs, who they're hoping is going to become a starter at left guard. But again, it's like a three-year deal at $5 million per year. So if he doesn't ascend that way, there's nothing cap prohibitive. They took no real swing on anybody. And you'll see this across the board. Like, they brought in people to fill a lot of holes. It is the baselining of the roster moving forward.
Bram, awesome stuff. Tell the folks where they can find you and all your great content.
You can find me at Real Bram W on all of the different social media platforms. I have a radio show from 3 to 5 in Washington on ESPN 630, the Sports Capital. And I call the Commanders game. So I'll see you up at MetLife whenever we get you on the schedule.
Yeah, and we'll have that in a couple of weeks, and we figure out who's going where when. Bram, good stuff, my friend. I appreciate it.
See you.
You love turf. You're good at it. So you start a turf biz. Business grows. Your savings grow. Become the most celebrated name in turf. Are you ready for all that life brings?
Giants Huddle Podcast is brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. From game day to every day, Citizens is made ready for Giant fans with insights, guidance, and solutions. Learn more at citizensbank.com. Caleb Williams won to the Bears. No surprise. Jaden Daniels, a second overall pick to the Washington Commanders. Now to make the selection for the New England Patriots is Mike Giardi. He covers them from the Boston Sports Journal. You probably remember him from his time over at NFL Network. Mike, appreciate the time, man. How's the offseason treating you? A lot of new faces up there for the Patriots for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, this has not been the standard offseason for the Patriots, right? A lot of change and trying to get to know the new decision makers here and figure out what they're thinking, you know, as you go through free agency and headed into the draft. But it's kind of an exciting time, right? We'd lived the same life for 24, 25 years with Bill Belichick, and it was time for a change. And now let's see if they made the right change, and these are the right people to push the Patriots forward.
Yeah, you've had some exposure to the new regime from Mayo to Wolf, the new general manager. Obviously, Robert Kraft still there as the man in charge of everything. What's your feel for the approach of this regime in terms of how quickly they want to build this thing back up? Obviously, Robert Kraft, over 80 years old, but you have a young core here and a roster that has a lot of holes to fill. What's your feel for that?
I think there's a real push and pull inside the organization already because of what you mentioned, right? Robert is aging, wants this team to get back to where it had been for many, many years with Belichick and Tom Brady winning Super Bowls, competing for titles, you know, in the AFC Championship game basically every year. And now the last 4 years have been very difficult for him to swallow. They've obviously struggled at the quarterback position, but the roster was really depleted. And so I think there's this idea that, you know, some people inside the building would like to sort of maybe think about trading back, right? And getting more assets, because when you look at the roster, you say there's just not enough blue chippers. But then other people look at it and say, you don't want to be picking third ever again. And if you get the quarterback right here, you can piecemeal it together for the first year, then continue to add in year two and maybe allow that player to set sail and become the franchise quarterback that you hope he's going to be. So I think that's invariably what they're going to do. I think it's just too rich and there's just too much talent at the top of the draft to say, you know what, we're going to walk away from a quarterback or we're going to pick one in the second round. No, we're here at three. There are some good prospects. Let's take one of them, develop, and hope we found the guy.
Yeah, Mike, and that's the trick, right? And I think that's always the question and the evaluation here, whether or not you get the quarterback first and then you build around the quarterback, or you want to make the situation better for when the quarterback arrives. But if you wait too long to get the quarterback, you could be sitting there picking 11th or 12th. You can't get one. And if they really believe this year that who knows who's actually going to be there, three or four of these quarterbacks can be high-level NFL starters, I'm not sure there's a good rationale for not taking them.
I 100% agree. And look, I think they sort of set themselves up for this, right? Because they signed Jacoby Brissett. So he's the perfect bridge quarterback and someone who has worked so well with younger quarterbacks. Just ask Sam Howell about him in Washington and how helpful Jacoby was for him last year. Sam Howell's going to miss Jacoby Brissett in that front because he was such a good person to learn from, to understand work habits, how you get things done. And there was no ego involved in there. You know, Jacoby Brissett wants to start football games, but okay, you went with Sam. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that Sam is ready to go on Sunday as well as myself. So they have him, and they have Bailey Zappe, who I think a lot of people in New England thought probably wouldn't still be here. But it makes a lot of sense in that he started games in each of the last 2 years. You know that you can survive a couple games with him as a starting quarterback. So if your rookie quarterback is not ready to go and Jacoby Brissett doesn't pan out early, then you don't turn to the rookie quarterback if he's not ready. You turn to Bailey Zappe, someone with experience. So you're not pushing this kid out there before he's ready or before you're ready for him.
Yeah, when it comes to Elliott Wolf, look, he's not his dad, but to think some of those theories and ideas of team building haven't carried over, I think would be a little naive. And the one thing Ron Wolf used to do, Mike, you know this, just stack quarterbacks, right? You pick one every year, every couple of years is the most important position. You got to make sure you are set. So I got to imagine that has to play into some of the thinking here, just understanding how important that position is.
Well, just like you mentioned with his dad, right? I mean, during the time that he had Brett Favre, they also draft Hasselbeck, they draft Brunell, they turn those guys into high picks. It just makes sense to be in the quarterback business, if not every year, every other year, because you just don't know. You might find that diamond in the rough after the first round, second, third, fourth round, be able to develop that guy and turn him into an asset for you going forward. Or he's a very cheap backup quarterback that you trust to put in there. I think that's the way most teams should operate. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of them do, but I'm certain that Elliott understands that. And I would believe strongly, just based on how he's constructed the room thus far, that he understands the value of that position and having more than enough guys, right? You've got to be prepared for every situation.
How closed of a book has this front office and coaching staff been? You know, we all know Bill Belichick never let anything get out of that building. Has this been the same? Has it been a little bit different? Have you gotten some kind of feel for what they're doing? Or are you still operating more on kind of outside intelligence?
Well, I think Elliott Wolf has been pretty closed off about his desires here. Like, I mean, he talked about at the combine, they need to weaponize the offense. Look, he's just saying what the rest of us have known for the last, even back to the Brady's final couple of years, right, where they just didn't have enough pieces on offense. And you look at their group last year and you say, that's a bottom third receiver room. You know, Ramondre Stevenson's their best offensive player. He's a running back. How much can a running back really impact? It didn't have enough on the offensive line. Like, there's a lot of things for him to attack there. So when he said that, people were like, oh, it's a different regime. I'm like, well, no, he's just kind of echoing what we all know need to be done. But then in terms of what he likes, he hasn't said, you know, and in fact, my understanding of what's going on in the offices right now is he's the final decision maker. He's the one who's going to make the pick, but he's letting everyone else debate and he's just taking it all in. You know, he doesn't want to tip his hand so that someone would say, man, I don't want to go in and tell Elliott that I think quarterback X is terrible, because then Elliott's going to look at me and go in his head, be like, I think he's the best one of the bunch. Like, do I have a problem here? So he wants to encourage those discussions, and maybe someone brings something up at the table that says, Elliott says to himself, did I see that right? Do I need to go back and look at tape again? Do I need to go back and look at my notes from interviews? Did I miss that part of it? So I think it's good, healthy discussion. Mayo's been a little bit more forthcoming and has had to walk a couple things back. I think it's, to me, it's about when you're doing this full time for the first time. You know, we talked to Gerard every couple weeks during the course of the season on a Zoom for 5 minutes, right? It's nothing. Now you're the head coach and your words carry even more weight. And he did say they were going to spend a ton of money in free agency. That's not what happened. And he had to kind of walk that back. There's been a couple other times where he said stuff that he's had to walk back, but nothing that I find damaging. And to me, it's just part of the learning process for him, that understanding that everything he says is going to be under a microscope.
All right, let's make the pick. Then I'll have a couple follow-ups here with the third pick in our Giants Huddle mock draft. The New England Patriots select
Drake May, quarterback, North Carolina.
How close, Mike, do you think it is right now between May, McCarthy? I'll throw Jaden Daniels into that mix too in this evaluation process for that Patriots front office.
I think they look at Daniels as that group as the most ready to go, right? But if he's not going to be there, now you're looking at the traits that May has, the things that you can't teach. And I think the way it's been described to me, and I sort of get this having watched a lot of Drake May's tape now, is that there isn't anything that Drake hasn't done on a football field, right? Like, he makes every throw that you want him to make. He's been operating in big situations, 2-minute drills. He's been really good on third down, all these different things. Now, look, there's consistency issues. His footwork is a problem. But I think when you talk to people, They've hired Alex Van Pelt to be the offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, former head coach of the Giants, who has a good reputation of working with quarterbacks. And they say, we can fix this, right? Like this isn't something that should take, you know, a year to fix, that we can get this down in a few months. And if, in fact, we feel like he's ready to go, we'll put him out there. So I think there's just too many things with Drake that you can't ignore. And like JJ definitely has fans in the Patriots organization. And I think if you look at Elliott's history with Cleveland, you know, he was there when they drafted Baker Mayfield number one, and that draft was supposed to be Sam Darnold. And then there were some rumblings that they were going to take Josh Allen. And at the end of the day, they decided on Baker Mayfield. John Dorsey. And Elliott was part of that conversation. So I think Elliott likes JJ and some of the energy that he brings. But again, the traits are undeniable with Drake May.
No question. Final question. If the Patriots did decide to trade down, Mike, would they be more in favor of just going down a couple spots, maybe picking up a future pick, say with the Giants at 6, or would they be more apt, do you think, to go down into that 11 to 13 ranges where, you know, the Vikings, the Raiders, and the Broncos are all potentially looking for their new quarterback, where your return is going to be much bigger in terms of quantity of picks, but you're probably trading out of that blue chip level of player that I and most other people think is really strong in this draft?
And that's the sense that I get, is that if they do go back, the feeling, at least among some people in the organization I've talked to, is like, you don't want to go back too far. There are, let's say 8, 9, 10 guys at the top of the draft that people think plug and play, and that guy could be an all pro one day, or at least a Pro Bowl over and over again. And I think if you start to get out of that range, you get down to Vegas at 13 or even Minnesota at 11, have you risked not removing yourself from that group of players and maybe getting the B-plus player instead of the A player? And I think, again, even though they could use B-plus players, they just don't have enough blue chip players to think that makes a lot of sense to go back, get more picks. And then you're sort of throwing darts and hoping that, you know, you hit somebody later on. I think when you look at that top 8, 9, 10 guys, you say, man, there's a perfect role for him. There's a role right away, and that guy can impact us right away.
Mike, good stuff, my friend. Appreciate the time. Tell the folks where they can find all your great work these days.
I'm on Twitter at Mike Giardi, and I'm on Boston Sports Journal. You can definitely check me out there. We have been all over the draft. This is a different time for us. They haven't been a pick this high in eons, right? I think since Drew Bledsoe, really, quite frankly. So it's kind of a different time for us, and it's been interesting to sort of look at positions that normally you wouldn't be looking at. Normally we're looking at day 3 quarterbacks, and here you're looking at day 1 guys that are going off at the top of the board.
Well, no one knows the organization better than Mike. He has his finger on the pulse of the Patriots. Mike, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, sir.
Our mock draft has been a little chalky so far. Picks 1 through 3, the 3 quarterbacks you would expect. Caleb Williams at number 1. Number 2, Jaden Daniels to the Commanders. And then Drake May to the New England Patriots. That brings us to pick number 4. We bring in Darren Urban, who, of course, writes for the Arizona Cardinals team site. Darren, John Schmelk here in the Giants facility. You're in the Cardinals facility, clearly. Thanks for being with us, man. How's your offseason been?
It's been good. I mean, clearly after last season, when the Cardinals were undergoing a lot of changes and a new GM and a new coach and just a whole bunch of different things, there's been a settled feel to this a little bit more. I mean, obviously the Cardinals still have a lot that they're trying to get done in terms of improving the roster, but Kyler Murray's back. He's healthy, so he'll have a whole off season. And now it's a question of Giamatti Asamoah making sure that he builds up this roster to a point where this team can be competitive again.
You know, it's funny. You wouldn't think to say this about a team that's picking 4th overall, but I think the quality of the play for the Cardinals is actually pretty good last year. I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic with what we saw from the coaching on both sides of the football and from just frankly how hard the players played.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And obviously you guys got to see that firsthand. I know the Giants ended up pulling out that win early in the season, but I'll be honest, that first half that the Cardinals played against the Giants was the finest half of football that I'd seen this team play in quite some time. And then that went on. They won in Pittsburgh. They won in Philadelphia. There were quality wins. And again, like you said, the way they were playing, not only how hard, but kind of just the complete sea change of how they approach offense, especially after going from Cliff Kingsbury to now Drew Petzing's offense, more of a run first. And this is all while trying to bring back Kyler Murray from an ACL tear and having him do it on the fly in the middle of a season, I thought was pretty impressive.
And the Cardinals are the first team in this draft that has their quarterback in place. Kyler Murray's under contract. You're paying him a lot of money. But if he's healthy and he's playing well, that really doesn't matter. So how do you figure his timetable, meaning Murray's, he's in his prime, you're paying him, but you're still trying to build the rest of the roster. So what's the pace now of this rebuild? Last year, it was very much a gather picks, plan for the future type of plan. Is that still where the Cardinals are at, or is this thing starting to now accelerate a little bit?
I think you're kind of in between a little bit of seeing where it might be. I mean, I think we've seen some of these before. A lot of people like making the comparison to what the Cardinals are doing to what the Lions did when Dan Campbell first came in. And if you look at Dan Campbell's second year, they took a jump in wins, but it's not like they were in the playoffs. I don't know what's exactly going to happen. I think last year, given the fact you knew we were going to miss Kyler Murray for at least half the season and you really needed to restructure the roster in a lot of ways, it made sense to kind of fully go in a whole hog on the rebuild. You know, this year you've got Kyler healthy. You know, I do think this offense is in a place where it could do some things if you add the right pieces. Defensively, they do need more pieces than they do on offense. But again, if you fight the way you did under Nick Rallis, the defensive coordinator last year, you know, maybe it won't take that many pieces. The schedule still difficult, not quite as hard perhaps as what they saw last year. I think there's a lot in place and we'll see. I certainly wouldn't rule any kind of push out because let's face it, John, I mean, when you look at this league, there's always that possibility of making a huge jump in one season. It just depends on health, who you have in place, what your schedule looks like. And the Cardinals, if Kyler Murray plays the way they hope he can play, I think they're in a spot to potentially surprise some people.
Yeah, and then the Giants 2 years ago, right? No one expected them to be a playoff team. They figured out a way to not only get into the playoffs, but even win a playoff game. So you're right. It could happen in any year. And the reason I asked that question, Darren, is I think the thought here is that the Cardinals could still be in the business of trading down, acquiring more picks, getting more ammo, or you're looking at the best non-quarterback in the class, whomever the Cardinals think that is, that they could select that player, which would probably be the first or second highest graded player on any logical person's board here. So what are the thoughts behind whether or not the Cardinals would look to move out of this spot?
Well, I mean, I made this analogy in my mailbag today. Like, if you're in a situation where you don't want to move from your house and you have no plans to, but somebody comes along and offers you some ridiculous amount of money, you're going to consider it and you might even pull the trigger because you'd be dumb not to. I feel like that's a little bit like where the Cardinals are. They're in a really good place. They're going to get an excellent football player at four. And like you said, potentially either the first or second best player in the class, depending on who you ask. Or they can get extra first round picks. They've already got a second first round pick. They picked number 27 as well. I mean, I'm just throwing obviously the speculation about the Vikings. The Vikings somehow come to you and say, we're going to give you 11 and 23. You already have 27. We'll give you a first next year. And who knows, maybe even one other lower pick. I mean, if you're the Cardinals, do you pass on that? I understand what you're passing at four, but that's a lot of potentially high profile type guys that you can add to this roster and make this rebuild go that much faster. So I think everything's on the table. Monty, quite frankly, he wouldn't be doing his job if he wasn't listening. And the other thing too, for me, we're not going to know until that fourth pick is up. I mean, you mentioned it could go chalk and the Patriots end up going quarterback, but what if the Patriots don't go quarterback? What if the Patriots decide to take Marvin Harrison? What happens if they go McCarthy third and then Drake May is sitting there at four? Does that become a more valuable thing? You just don't know what teams might want to do and what they might offer under the pressure of being on the clock. So is the trade possible? Absolutely. Would I be shocked if the Cardinals stick and pick? I wouldn't be shocked on that either. I think Monty's in a really good place.
How about option three? What if they trade back and then move back up a couple spots, Darren, to pick one of those elite guys? I can see them doing that too.
Well, they did that last year. Again, they were at three last year. They traded back to 12 with Houston, and then they traded back up to six to get Paris Johnson. So Monty Austin-Ford absolutely has proven he'll do that, and I wouldn't rule that out either. Because he's got a track record already as a GM to be able to not only make those moves, but seemingly make them really well. And I don't know if you got a chance to, but many, many people saw got to see our video of him in the war room last year making all those moves. He seems a natural in that environment about making those moves and doing it calmly and with the right mindset. So again, I'm not ruling anything out with this guy, and that's why a lot of people feel really good about him pushing this roster forward.
All right, so with the pick number 4 in our Giants Huddle reporter mock draft, the Arizona Cardinals select.
I'm going to, unfortunately for you, John, stay chalk. I am going to go with Marvin Harrison. Receiver is a place where they need help. A lot of people feel Marvin Harrison's the best guy. I know as we get through this forever process of actually getting to the draft, more and more people want to talk about, well, what if it's Rome Odunze and what if it's Malik Nabers? And those guys are both great players. But I'm going to stick with the guy that a lot of people think is the best guy. And it just fills this gigantic need that they have. Again, I'm going to reiterate, I'm not going to be surprised if they trade out of it and then potentially trade back up for an Odunze or a Nabers. But right now in this little exercise, I'm going to stay with Marvin Harrison up 4.
Is this more about the position and the side of the ball and helping Kyler, or is this just that you think he's the best player in the draft?
You know, for me, I'm not going to sit here and say I know who the best player in the draft is, but I know this. I know that if you had to name to me the top 3 needs for the Cardinals right now, it would be wide receiver, it would be cornerback, and it would be edge rusher. And quite frankly, I do not see the edge rusher or cornerback that makes sense at 4 this year. Now, is that person at 11 if you trade back? Potentially. But I don't see that guy at 4. And I think when you talk about the best guys in the draft and you're taking at 4, you take a guy who around here, at least, a lot of the fans see as another potential Larry Fitzgerald. And obviously, when you start talking about that name in this area, people get very excited about potentially having another guy like that.
Darren, final question. How close do you think those wide receivers are in terms of things you've heard and how tough a decision this really is? Because I talk to people around the league and they tell me that, look, there are a lot of teams that have Nabers as their number one guy. And this order is going to be different for a lot of different teams.
And I wouldn't be surprised about that. And again, I don't even know if Harrison would be the guy that the Cardinals have first out of those 3. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of different ways. I can see why people like the other 2 guys. I personally tend to move a little bit more towards Odunze and Harrison because of their size, their height. Malik Nabers is 6 feet. I think he's going to be a fantastic player, but I love the idea of the Cardinals having a bigger receiver. Again, having covered the entire career of Larry Fitzgerald, I remember what that meant in the passing game. And I just think both those guys really fit it. And it just feels, given everything we've heard, that Harrison might be a slightly ahead of Odunze. And again, when we start talking about who's where and everything, I get very wary of the conversations in the last 2 weeks before the draft, because it's whether it's smoke screens or it's people just getting tired of talking about the same stuff. So they just try and get different with how they analyze things. This whole last couple of weeks gets really kind of sideways in a lot of ways.
And I guess you already answered this final one. At 27, then you're looking at corner or edge based on the needs you just talked about.
I could see corner. I could see edge. I could see potentially interior offensive line. That's another need of theirs. They've done a better job in terms of filling those needs in free agency, so they don't have to do that, but they could use a good guard if somebody's there at 27. I'm not ruling anything out. And not only do they have 27, but they also have 35. Yeah. So, they've got some options there. There should be some corners there at 27 or 35 that they could be able to fill that role. The edge rusher is a lot more of a sticky situation, because I feel like too high at 4, the top guys, 2 or 3 of them are probably all gone by 27. Maybe not. There could be guy at 27 or 35, but maybe it's a little bit more of a crapshoot of like a boomer bust type of dude that you would take and say he could be really good edge rusher and he might wash out a little bit. We've seen a lot of edge rushers like that. So it'll be interesting to see how the Cardinals approach it.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about Chop Robinson, but
I'm not naming any names.
No, I know you're not naming any names. I'm naming names, and that's okay. Because that's not going to get you in any trouble. Darren, great stuff. Tell the folks where they can find all your work.
We're on azcardinals.com, and if you go to X, I'm at Cards Chatter.
Darren, great stuff, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
You're ready for a change. Payday comes early with Citizens, so go to that retreat. New you moves to the country. Now you're raising goats and launching a lifestyle brand. Are you ready for all that life brings?
All right, now we turn our attention to the fifth pick in our 2024 Giants Huddle Mock Draft. And to make that selection for the Los Angeles Chargers is Daniel Popper, former New Yorker, who now covers the Chargers for The Athletic. Daniel, it's good to see you, man. How are you?
Good to see you as well. Former New York. I feel like if you're from New York area, you're always a New Yorker.
No, that's true.
I used to live there, but I'm always going to be a New Yorker, you know?
No, absolutely. And it's funny. We were on the same panel on CBS the night after. I think it was a Saturday or Sunday when the Jets drafted Sam Darnold. The Giants drafted Saquon Barkley. And I was very complimentary of the Jets pick of Sam Darnold. You liked the Barkley pick too. And we sat there, and now we're here 5 years later or 6 years later, and neither guy is on the team that they started at, which shows you what a crapshoot the draft is.
Exactly. And now we're going to go ahead and try and prognosticate what's going to happen, which is just a futile effort all the way around.
Yeah. And I think evaluating even these quarterbacks can be a futile effort too, but that is a longer conversation for a different podcast. So Daniel, let's talk a little bit about the Chargers here. I know you know this, but I think a lot of fans realize what a rough shape this roster is in right now and how it could even get worse after next season. So give me a breakdown of where the Chargers are here and a little bit of a reset with Jim Harbaugh coming in.
Yeah. So obviously you've had quite a bit of turnover. You know, they headed into this off season and they had four sort of huge veteran contracts that they had to deal with: Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. They end up deciding to move on from the two receivers. Obviously Mike Williams signs with the Jets. They trade Keenan Allen to the Bears. And so you start there, the receiver room is super thin. And then you sort of move along to the rest of the roster. They've done some work in free agency. Joe Ortiz, the new GM, coming in, signing a lot of the guys that he had either drafted or brought into Baltimore during his 26 years there. And so they've added some depth, but there's still a lot of holes here. I mean, you talk about obviously starting with receiver, they could add to the offensive line. The corner room is thin. The linebacker room is thin. They need work on the defensive line. And so, you know, you start looking through scenarios here. How do the Chargers go about, you know, filling as many of these needs as possible? Like, they obviously have the star power with Justin Herbert, Khalil Mack, and Joey Bosa still there, but this is very much a rebuilding, retooling process for Jim Harbaugh and Joe Ortiz as they enter, you know, sort of their first offseason together.
And then next year, you could have Mack and Bosa out the door based on what their contract situation is too, right? So I guess my question, how much of a long-term process has Harbaugh and Ortiz talked about this being, or is this something they want to make more of a quick retool given the type of contract Justin Herbert's under and his obviously elite skills as a quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, publicly they've said they want to win every single year. Right. But I think you sort of have to sort through those comments and look at the roster and sort of take a sober approach to this thing. My whole thing all along is it makes more sense to build for 25 as opposed to 24. Now you have Justin Herbert. You're always going to have an ability to compete. The question is the roster right now capable of getting to a point where they're going to be Super Bowl caliber? And you just heard what I talked about, all of the different positions that they need. It does feel like it's going to be sort of a two-year process here, but they could have moved on from Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, and they didn't. And so I think they're trying to sort of toe that line, find the middle ground where they can put a competitive team on the field in 24, while also keeping in the back of their mind that building for 25, really taking a shot in that year, probably aligns better with where the roster stands right now.
And I am giving all the reporters in this mock draft the ability to trade down if they want. So Daniel, give me the process here of how you would think about a potential trade down here. I kind of think of this like I did back in the day, and I was a young kid then, but the way Jimmy Johnson went into Dallas and he knew these college players better than anyone else because he had just coached in college for so long. He recruited most of these guys. Well, that's what Jim Harbaugh is, right? So I would imagine, much like Jimmy Johnson back in the day, he's going to want as many picks as possible because he knows these college players so well. So take me through the idea of trading back and what that scenario might look like.
Yeah, so I wrote about it for today. The range I'm looking at is like 9 to 13 because I can see, you know, an explanation for why some of those teams would move up, right? Like the Bears and the Jets, it's a little bit harder to get there, but you could see both of them maybe moving up to 5 if one of those receivers is available. I know the Jets signed Mike Williams, but he's coming off an ACL after Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams. There isn't a ton there. The Bears, they obviously traded for Keenan Allen. That seems like a rental. He's on the last year of his deal. You know, after DJ Moore not a ton there, right? So you can see that sort of happening. And then 11, you have the Vikings, obviously, you know, possibility of moving up for quarterback. Same thing with the Broncos and Raiders at 12 and 13. And so you have sort of two different groups there. The two teams that could potentially move up if they want one of these receivers, say if four quarterbacks go in the top four, or the teams that could be moving up for a quarterback. At 9 and 10, I think you could, I would be willing to accept a deal that doesn't include a future first round pick, some sort of future second paired with some sort of maybe a third round pick in 24 this year, some sort of, you know, third round, seventh round pick swap, that type of thing. When you get into the 11 to 13 range, like, I'm not making a deal there unless I can get a future first. And this sort of aligns with like the building process that we were just talking about, right? Like, I'm thinking 25 is the year you build it and really have a shot. And so accruing an additional first round pick in 25, that would go a long way towards that sort of timeline, right? And then you also look at the history of things, right? What happens in this sort of range? What are sort of the returns? The one I look at is the Dolphins moving up for Jaylen Waddle in 2021. That was 12-6, and the Eagles got a future first out of that trade. And so, like, that's sort of the type of return that I'm looking at in this sort of area. And if I was moving to 11 or later, I wouldn't accept, you know, anything less than a future first. The other part of this too is that you're going to have a really good player there at 5. And so that's sort of the balance.
Yeah, the Vikings are interesting, right? So what else do you think they will get in addition to the two firsts this year? Would you try to get that third first of them given their desperate situation, or do you think that's a pipe dream?
That feels like too much. I think you probably you asked for as much as you can get. The trade I threw out was 11 and 23. The Chargers give a 2025 seventh, and then the Vikings give a 2025 third. So something like that would sort of align. I'm basically using trade value charts to figure out, okay, what's the return usually look like? You know, the two trades that I looked back on that were sort of precedent were the one I just mentioned about Waddle, and then the Bills moving up for Josh Allen in 2018. That was 12-7. That was 2 seconds. And so, like, the value there is sort of around 1,500 points based on the over the cap chart. And so, like, that's sort of what I'm looking at. Now, there are outliers here, right? Like, last year, the Cardinals traded out and then to 12 out of the top five and then moved back up to 6 to take Paris Johnson out of Ohio State. That return with the Lions was pretty much even. So you have sort of these different scenarios. To me, like, prioritizing that return is obviously super important.
Yeah, and I almost feel like you can have a bit of an auction process here, right? You have so many teams that are, and I'll use the word, and I use it sparingly, but I think they're desperate. I think the Vikings are desperate. The Broncos are most certainly desperate. And I think I'd put the Raiders in that category too, where you might get more than what the past dictates just because these teams are going to keep trying to, you know, one-up each other. They keep putting the auction sign up because they know they need a guy at that position so badly.
Right, and the Chargers are going to have leverage, right? Because they don't need a quarterback. So they're not in that desperation mode at all. And in a certain way, like, it's a win-win scenario, right? You move down, you accrue additional picks, and you have a better opportunity to add more for all of these needs that you have. Or you stay at 5 and you address what is like a very big need at either receiver, you know, maybe tackle. For me, it's one of these receivers. You moved on from your top two receivers. So either way, you're getting a really good player and you're fitting a need. And so the Chargers can sit there and be like, listen, we're not going to move off of 5. We're not going to give up the opportunity to draft one of these receivers unless we get a return. And like you said, some of these teams that are moving up, particularly for quarterbacks, might be willing to, you know, depart with the future first to make that happen and get their quarterback of the future. So I think the Chargers are positioned pretty well here.
And the Chargers are on the clock with the 5th pick of the 2024 Giants Huddle Mock Draft. The Los Angeles Chargers trade or select?
They select Malik Nabers, wide receiver out of LSU. I'm always going to consider the trade down, right? And especially in the Vikings case, picking up that additional first at 23 overall, if that's the package they get, is obviously going to be very intriguing. But the Chargers need receiver talent. Like, and I know that they've talked about, Jim Harbaugh and Joe Ortiz have talked about, you know, wanting to run the football, but the receiver room is really thin. I mean, the only really established pro they have is Joshua Palmer. Quentin Johnston was a first round pick last year, but he had a really rough rookie year. After that, you're talking about a return man and Darius Davis. They could potentially shop in the free agent market, but the opportunity here to get a player like Malik Nabers is just too good for me to pass up. He's the type of explosive threat that the Chargers just have not had. The long speed, the deception in the route running, the hands, yards after catch, all of it, I think, just fits perfectly with what the Chargers need. And so, you know, to me, like, I'm taking the best player available here. That's Malik Nabers. And it just so happens to align with the biggest need on the roster, in my opinion.
Your wide receiver tackle debate. Is this more about you just like Nabers better than Alt as a player? Or is it also you feel better about Trey Pipkins out there at right tackle than you do about what they're owning out there at wide receiver?
Yeah, it's a combination. It's more so that I'm just looking at who's the best player. To me, Malik Nabers is a better player than Joe Alt. I think Joe Alt's really good. Like, I think he's going to be a good pro. Obviously, the athleticism is off the charts, the size. He's got great feet. Like, the stuff that he does in the run game, you know, they're pulling him from left tackle to the right side, and he's executing blocks over there very consistently. I love all of that. My issue with Alt is the anchor is not what I would want out of, like, a top five
tackle. Very tall, very tall.
And so, like, you know, what I watch is, like, Chargers film, and what I see is Khalil Mack's bull rush. And I'm watching Joe Alt, and I'm like, what's going to happen on the first play of the game if they get, you know, one of these elite edge rushers? They're going to bull rush you right away, and they're going to see if you're up for it. And if you don't have the anchor, they're going to keep coming at you with that move for the rest of the game. I've seen Khalil Mack bull rush some of the best tackles in the league, including Tyron Smith. So that's my reservation. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player, but when I'm comparing Malik Nabers to Joe Alt, I'm seeing Malik Nabers, who I project as being like a true number one guy, take the top off the defense, like true difference maker. Alt, I just have some concerns. And so that's sort of my calculus. And then again, like what you mentioned, the other combination of this is that the offensive line is, I think, in better shape than a lot of people on the outside think. Trey Pipkins to me is like a mid-level starter. Like, he's not an all pro bowl type guy, but he's functional out there. Like, it's not like he's a turnstile out there. And so you can sort of piece this together. And the Chargers certainly think that they're going to get more out of these players. That's the whole reason you go get Jim Harbaugh, is that you're going to elevate all of these guys. And so it's a combination of all those things. More so, though, Malik Nabers to me is a better prospect than Joe Alt comparison, you know, comparing them one-to-one.
No, and I happen to agree with you on that. And it's funny, you talking about Mack's bull rush is like me watching these 295-pound centers and just watching Dexter Lawrence plow undersized centers into the backfield. And that's all I can see. I can't unsee that now, which is why Jackson Power Johnson, I love him to death, because he's actually a 325-pound center. You just don't have those in the NFL anymore. It's funny.
Right. So, like, that's the, you know, you think back to that and you're like, okay, like, you love all of the positive traits. Like, I think Alt's going to be a really good run blocker in the league. But when you're taking a tackle in the top five, like, you got to prioritize pass protection. And regardless of what you want your offensive vision to be, the number one goal here is protecting Justin Herbert. He's been injured the last two seasons, you know, between the fractured rib cartilage and then the broken index finger. Like, you got to protect him. And so, like, if you're going to spend a premium pick, I want a guy that I'm really confident is going to be able to match up with some of these edge rushers in the NFL.
Final question, Daniel. This is on play style, because I think everyone just assumes that, oh, Jim Harbaugh is going to run it like he did in Michigan a million times. You go back, like, he had Colin Kaepernick throwing the ball over the place in San Francisco. It's not like they didn't, like, throw the ball down there when Kaepernick was their quarterback for a few years. Do you think this is going to be as run heavy as a lot of people think? Or do you think he's going to realize, wait a second, I have Justin Herbert. He's pretty awesome. I'm going to throw the ball more than maybe some people think I'm going to.
Yeah, my sense is it's going to be run heavy. Like, I think that's the vision here. The vision is that Justin Herbert has never had a good running game. What does he look like when he has a reliable running game? That it goes to sort of the broader idea of what they want the identity of the team, the organization to be. Like, they want to be physical. They want to be rough, tough, rugged, violent, like all of those types of things. In order to be that type of team, you got to come out and you got to be able to run the football. And so, like, is it the right path? I don't know. I'm not getting paid enough money to make that decision. I just will analyze it. To me, the way I would build it is try and get the absolute most out of Justin Herbert, because if he's playing at an MVP level, I feel like I can win a Super Bowl. But the Harbaugh idea of playing football is being that type of physical team. You bring in Greg Roman, one of the best run schemers in recent NFL history, and that's the idea. Pair it up that way and then see what that does for Justin Herbert, and we'll see if it actually works.
So you think this would be the first Ortiz Harbaugh, you know, Jim Harbaugh kind of pressure point in the relationship, where Ortiz says, well, we think Nabers is the best player, and Jim Harbaugh's in there, well, I want an offensive lineman. I think that could be interesting to see how that dynamic works between the two, if this is what the debate kind of comes down to.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I'm a big Survivor fan. So, you know, like, if you have like a tribe that hasn't voted yet, you don't know where the lines fall as far as like whose allegiance is to who. This is what it feels like right now. Like, you have no idea like where they want to go, what they're prioritizing. It is a wild card as far as like, well, what's the strategy here? And compare it to, like, you know, Tom Telesco, the previous GM, was here for 11 years. I used to have 11, like, decade of data to look at to be like, okay, this is what he prioritizes. This is the positional value. This is the type of player he wants. You can go back and look at some Ravens drafts, but the last time Jim Harbaugh drafted in the NFL was 10 years ago. You know, so like there is a lot of uncertainty here, a lot of unknown, and party lines, you know, will be drawn to bring it to the survivor analogy.
Have they said who has final say on the draft pick? Is it Harbaugh or is it Ortiz?
I've asked a million times. I've asked like 10 different people. The answer I always get is if they're disagreeing to the point where somebody needs to have final say, then they have bigger problems than that. So, you know, effectively it's ownership. You know, Dean Spanos is the owner. His son, John Spanos, is the president of football operations. Like, in reality, he has final say. And that's sort of the best way to answer that question. But I think we're going to find out a lot here with this draft, like whose vision is really driving it forward. Because you talk about where Ortiz came from in Baltimore. That's best player available. That's the Ozzie Newsome yep. school of drafting. Talk about Kyle Hamilton, right? They drafted Kyle Hamilton after they played Marcus Williams in $70 million in free agency. But he was the best player on their board. So that's like, you know, if you're looking at it, you know, Malik Nabers is probably going to be the best player available there if it falls like your mock draft has fallen. Is it a best player available thing, or is Harbaugh really driving this ship? And, you know, do they go trade down offensive linemen or even offensive linemen at five? It's going
to
be fascinating.
Well, we can't wait to find out, Daniel. Tell the folks where they can find your great story on the trade scenarios and everything else you're writing about the Chargers.
Yeah, everything on theathletic.com/team/Chargers. And you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel R. Popper and read all my draft coverage there.
Remember, folks, and if you subscribe, you get the Beast from Dame Brewer for free as well. And there's a lot of deals out there all the time, so make sure you go and do that. Daniel, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. New Yorkers always, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Giant fans love a winner. It's why they love Citizens, named a 2022 Best Bank in the U.S. by who else? The Banker. As the official bank of the Giants and sponsor of the huddle, Citizens is made ready for fans of Big Blue. Learn more at citizensbank.com. We go from Zoom to live in person, and we're joined by Tom Rock, who covers the NFL writ large for Newsday. Tom, we've been chatting in a while, man. How are you?
John, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. It's been a long off season, but we're ready to get back into things with the draft next week.
Yeah, this is kind of like the unofficial kind of start of the 2024 grind. We have OTAs in a couple of weeks, rookie minicamp. We're going to see each other a lot more often. Everyone's going to be around. It's going to be fun. So just to recap where we are, this is our reporter mock draft. If you're just tuning in for the Giants pick, we have a reporter from each team make a selection for their team up to the Giants at 6. I did give each reporter an opportunity to make a trade if they desired. They all declined. They wanted to make their selection. So we'll see if this is how it goes on draft night. Tom and I will talk about that. So just to recap, Caleb Williams, number 1 to the Bears. Jaden Daniels, number 2 to the Commanders. The Patriots select out of North Carolina, Drake May. The 4th pick, Marvin Harrison. Thank you, Tom. The Arizona Cardinals. And then the 5th pick, the LA Chargers, with a little bit, I think, of a detour that maybe some people did not expect. Malik Nabers, the wide receiver out of LSU. Tom, what are your thoughts here on the first 5 picks? And are you surprised that we haven't seen any movement?
Yeah, the lack of a trade here is what really jumps out, because I really think somebody's going to have to jump up there and get a quarterback 3, 4. You know, maybe it might be the Giants. Maybe it's be somebody else.
Chargers, too. I feel like Jim Harbaugh knows these college players so well. He's going to want, and for a roster that's a mess, he's going to want as many picks as possible.
I think so. And unless Harrison is there for him, I think, at 5, then my guess is that he trades back there. Listen, you know, is Caleb Williams going to go to Chicago? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the picks make sense. And honestly, I think this is a pretty good, ideal draft situation for the Giants, because then basically you're looking at, do you want J.J. McCarthy or do you want Rome Odunze?
The only thing, right, that would be more ideal, I guess, is if, at least from my opinion, the way I look at the players, if the Patriots preferred McCarthy to May and May was sitting there at 6.
Well, we'll get into that,
yes,
a little bit,
correct,
about what the Giants should do, because I think there's a lot of lessons from 20 years ago when we were right here and the Giants made that big move in the 2004 draft, and I think that there are a lot of echoes when you look at this draft situation, where you had a team that had a quarterback that was good, and they saw an opportunity to go out and spend some money and spend some capital rather, and find a quarterback that could really change the franchise, and that's what they did in 2004. They went out and obviously made the trade with the Chargers for Eli Manning. And the rest is history. The next decade and a half was history.
Yeah, what this comes down to me, Tom, it's not even at this point an evaluation of Daniel Jones for me. It's what you think of the quarterbacks that are available to you, right? If you think one of these guys can be your Eli Manning, to your point, right, that can win Super Bowls, be your quarterback for 15 years, make Pro Bowls, be an All-Pro, potentially be a Hall of Famer, then you decide whether or not you want to make a move. This is not just, oh, we need another quarterback, let's just pick one. You have to have the right evaluation on these guys. And I think, frankly, the Giants have done a really good job of not letting anyone know what they really do think of all these guys.
I think, first of all, the amount of resources that they've put into investigating these quarterbacks tells you that they're at least open to the idea, right? Mm-hmm. So this isn't some smokescreen that they're trotting out there. They didn't have Easter dinner with J.J. McCarthy because they wanted other people to think that they're drafting a quarterback. That's not what this is.
It wasn't just a really nice rack of lamb on the menu.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. Well, if they wanted that, they probably wouldn't have gone to Michigan. But you know, this is not just an exercise. And the one thing we've learned about Joe Shane over the last few years is that he keeps things very quiet. I mean, I can't even tell you with 100% accuracy who they drafted last year. that's how tight Joe Shane keeps these things. I don't know that he knows who he's going to draft yet. A lot of it obviously has to happen with how this plays out. You know, Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network is about as plugged in as you can get, right? Yesterday was throwing out ideas that the Giants may draft an offensive lineman.
I saw that.
I mean, that's how little people actually know about what the Giants are thinking right now. So, you know, to put yourself in his shoes and to say, oh, this is what I'm hearing he's thinking, you know, those are all conjectures and they don't really help. We'll know a week from now what he thinks, because by his actions, just as we know from his actions that they're at least interested in the quarterbacks because of the resources that they spent. It's the actions that are going to speak volumes for Joe Shane.
Yeah, and look, if you get it right, you really can't pay too much, right? If you get the right guy, there's no price you could put on the Texans getting C.J. Stroud last year.
Right.
They would trade 4 first-round picks to get that guy, and he was that good, right?
Absolutely.
So then the question is, what's your price point in regard to the inherent risk? Because frankly, right now, the NFL is still pretty bad at evaluating first round quarterbacks. You're looking at a 50-50 type of coin flip situation. So what do you think the price would be to go up to 3 if the Patriots decide to move? Maybe you have some insight whether or not you think they will, or 4. Are we looking at next year's 1?
Right. Well, so Elliot Wolf was just on, he had his press conference this morning.
Oh, I didn't see that, did he?
Open for business, he said. They need a lot. They have a lot of holes to fill. They're open for business. So to me, that's intriguing. Obviously, for the Giants, it's more intriguing for the other quarterback needy teams.
The Vikings, Raiders, and Broncos.
Everybody wants to go up to that spot. And if I'm the Giants and somebody wants to move up there and draft Drake May, go ahead. You know, I think if they like McCarthy obviously has a lot of upside, right? He's young, he's sort of raw. He can sit for a year, and you're not going to feel a lot of pressure to put him on the field right away because let's face it, Daniel's not going anywhere this coming season.
And he played in an NFL environment.
System, all that stuff. He gets a year of Brian Daboll whispering in his ear and going over film and sort of grooming him to be an NFL quarterback. So that's a positive. Drake May comes in. Now you're talking about a little bit of a different dynamic, right? Because Drake May comes in, you trade up to number 3 to get Drake May, which is probably the only way that happens for the Giants.
I would think that's probably true.
I think you can't really let him sit the whole season.
Maybe not the whole year, but I think you can start. You talk about McCarthy. Drake May's only played 2 years also.
That's true.
A redshirt sophomore. He's just, I think if you look at games played, him and McCarthy are probably very, very similar, if not identical.
Yeah, but I still think that May is a little bit more polished. And I think he's a little bit more ready, and I think he's a little bit more of he's a little bit more apt to fit into what the Giants are doing right now.
Well, he fits kind of that Josh Allen mold that they have in Buffalo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And he's a little bit more of a, I don't want to say magician, but he makes something out of nothing.
100% agree.
Right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the Giants roster right now, you're going to need a lot of that. You're going to need a lot of something out of nothings. And And for him to be able to do that, it would be a little more unfair, I think, to put McCarthy in that situation than it would be to throw Drake May in there and say, oh, let's see what the kid's got if we're 2-6 or 2-7 or whatever, you know, doomsday scenario I can come up with.
Now, we are not in this situation, but we wanted to address it because we thought it was a possibility of a trade-up. That situation is not what we're looking at right now. So I think that's your evaluation there, Tom. Now we're sitting here at number 6. Did it break your heart to see Neighbors go off the board right before you, or do you not see much of a difference between him and Odunze?
No, I think they're pretty parallel. I think I was a little surprised that the Chargers pick was Neighbors over Odunze. I think,
or Alt for that matter.
Yeah, Alt, and I think we were just talking before too that the Chargers, if this plays out the way it is, and if Harrison is not there, which Harrison went to the Cardinals, that the Chargers would probably trade back, and somebody else would jump up there and take a wide receiver, or maybe jump up there and take a quarterback in McCarthy if he's the fourth one, but yeah, I mean, Neighbors, Odunze, I think they're both number one receivers. I think, you know, it's going to be, you know, when you look back at this 4 years from now, you're gonna look at those three receivers and you're gonna say, well, maybe they're 1, 2, and 3, maybe they're 2, 1, 3, you know, but none of them are, I don't think, have bust written on them, and I don't think either team is going to regret taking either of those three.
I'm with you, and I think there's no doubt for me that, and again, we'll push quarterback aside for a second, we'll circle back around with McCarthy, that in terms of overall need, I don't think there's a bigger, I mean, I think if you want this offense to function with the loss of Saquon Barkley, Waller's future still up in the air, Tom, those are the team's two best offensive weapons heading into last year.
Yeah.
They're gone. So I really feel like there's a need here to get a centerpiece of the offense that other teams have to game plan against. Because right now the Giants have a bunch of guys that are good players, but no one that can really bring an offense and be the focus of an offense and bring it all together.
Yeah, I agree. They're really lacking the dynamic playmaker, and losing Saquon obviously was a big hit in that regard. And Waller would have been helpful if he does show up. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I think every day that passes that he's not here is another inch towards him not coming back.
Yeah,
right?
We'll
yeah,
wait and
yeah,
see.
Yeah, you have to think. So we'll see how that works out. Yeah, I mean, they don't. I was looking through the offensive depth chart the other day. There's one player that I circled that I said, that's the guy that they probably won't upgrade and possibly replace for the 2025 start of the season. It's Andrew Thomas. I mean, everybody else is.
I mean, you would hope John Michael Schmitz is one of those guys, but
he could be.
But you aren't there yet.
I'm not completely sold on that yet.
No, I'm with you on that.
I think there's a couple of other guys that could be, you know, could be nice players for them. But I think everybody else is upgradable. And
Brian Dable being an offensive-minded head coach, I don't know this, but I'd be shocked if he wasn't there talking to Joe Shane, like, dude, I need weapons here to work my offense.
Right. Now, but then you say, okay, well, are there good enough weapons later in the draft?
Good question.
At wide receiver, everybody talks about how deep this wide receiver class is. Are there hidden gems in the second and third round that could come in and be what maybe a first round pick the last two or three years would have been?
The way I've talked about this, Tom, is that there are guys in rounds 2 and 3 you can get that'll help you, but the guy is going to be hard to find. Might one of those guys in the second or third round or two become, sure, but you got to hit, out of the 15 guys you could pick from, you got to hit that one guy.
Right.
That's a lot tougher. It's a lot easier, I think, and if you look at the history of the last couple drafts, if you're picking a receiver in the top 10, top 11, your hit rate's pretty darn high in recent history.
Yeah, I mean, wide receiver is one of the few positions right now, I think, that translates from college to the NFL.
And pretty quickly, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. Any other position players besides quarterback or even just general positions that you would be considering here at 6 for the Giants?
I mean, I don't see a lot of defensive players that are that are that good, you know, at 6. Offensive line, you know, is Alt there. I'm not seeing the give up yet on Evan Neal.
Yeah, and they threw so many numbers at the problem in free agency. They brought in just, you know, Illuminor, Stinney, Runyon, Schlottman. There's so many guys they brought in. They've at least, I think, done a good job of preventing what happened last year where you're in week three and you're pulling guys off the street and Justin Pugh. I think they've done a good job of avoiding that situation. So I'm with you.
Yeah, I think offensive line is actually pretty deep right now. I don't know about how good they are, but they're pretty deep. And
a lot of guys that have started games.
I would say in terms of the triage that they were in a month into the season last year, they are stable right now.
I agree.
So, and listen, you know, there's no perfect offensive line in the NFL. It's all about how you deal with it, which gets us back to, of course, the quarterbacks.
And let's get to that, because I think I'm with you. I think the decision, and you kind of mentioned this, I think, in your first answer, is Rome Odunze. Any Brock Bowers consideration for you here?
Maybe for a minute.
But not really. If you move down a couple spots, maybe think about it. Would you consider moving down at all, by the way?
That could be a possibility.
Especially
depends.
If the quarterback said you can get a haul. Right?
I gotta know. You gotta know how they feel about JJ, right?
And that's really
you gotta,
all that
you gotta know
in
how
this conversation,
how that
right?
how that lamb was at Easter, you know. And that's really what it comes down to is do they have their heart set on in terms of this mock draft and the way that this is worked out. If they like McCarthy, this is a perfect situation for the Giants. You could get your guy.
If they like him, and that's the question.
If they like him.
That's the if. And how, you know what? They might like him, but they might not like, and I'll use the high school phraseology, do you like him?
Like him.
Or do you like him?
Yeah.
You know, and there's a difference there, right?
There's definitely a difference.
Especially when you're picking at six, and you, what I would consider a very safe pick in Rome Odunze, staring at your face at a position that's a premium position, one that you need. Do you like McCarthy, or do you like McCarthy?
Right. I think that it's easier to get a number one wide receiver from another team as a veteran, as a proven guy.
Might have to be a trade.
Trade, mm-hmm. yes, absolutely. But those guys move. They switch teams now.
We've seen it.
And we're seeing it now. And it's – you need a quarterback in the league, John. You need a quarterback. Daniel Jones is a good quarterback. And this is a league right now where good isn't good enough.
All right, so with the sixth overall pick in the 2024 Giants Huddle Mock Draft, the New York Giants via Tom Rock from Newsday Select.
I think if I'm a GM right now and I don't have one of the top five quarterbacks in this league, the top five guys who are MVP candidates who have you on the verge of a championship, and you know, I'm talking about Mahomes, I'm talking about Josh Allen, I'm talking about Lamar Jackson, Herbert, Burrow, you know. I don't know.
Maybe still Aaron Rodgers.
Trevor Lawrence is like on the cusp, right? CJ Stroud. Let's see what he does in year two, right?
Yeah, I put Stroud in kind of Jordan Love in that kind of outside
category. They're on the verge,
and
right?
And you know, Herbert might be there too. I'm not sure if Herbert's done enough to get in.
I like Herbert a lot.
I like Herbert a lot too, but we haven't seen it yet. At least, mm-hmm. Has he won a postseason game yet?
No.
I don't think he has,
no.
right?
Well, so, he's also had a pretty big knucklehead for a head
true.
Coach.
Yeah, but you're right. To have a guy that's one of those, what I like to call mutants at the quarterback position, that even when everything around you starts going bad, you can elevate everybody else.
Yes.
That's what every single team, and there's so few of them, right? Even a team like the Cowboys with Dak Prescott, they don't know. He's like this eighth best quarterback in the league. They don't know if he's the guy. Kirk Cousins is – no, he's not quite there.
I was going to throw those names out there. And Kirk Cousins is like the savior in Atlanta, and he hasn't won anything, right? Dak Prescott, I was looking through my list here of guys who I consider good quarterbacks. Derek Carr, right? Good quarterback. You can't win with him. These guys aren't – You need the elite quarterback, and if I was
like
a team,
Tua could be in that conversation.
Tua,
I don't think has
shown anything yet.
In that regard.
Stafford's won a Super Bowl, but Stafford was putting up amazing numbers for a bad Detroit team. So he's kind of a weird anomaly there. If you don't have that guy, if I was a team that didn't have that guy, I would be searching for him every 4 years.
Every chance you have.
And,
so even if you're not sure, you would still roll the dice.
Absolutely. Because you say, okay, so you say, well, let's build around Daniel Jones. How long is it going to take you to build from the roster that they have right now to a team that Daniel Jones can contend for a championship with? I mean, he may be ready to retire by the time that happens, right? So you're it's kind of a lost resource. Yeah, no, you need a quarterback. It's a quarterback league. You gotta keep swinging until you find that guy.
All right, so I know the answer, but I'll do the dramatic lay-in again. So with the sixth overall pick in the Giants Huddle 2024 mock draft, the New York Giants select
from the University of Michigan, J.J. McCarthy.
There you have it, folks. I usually ask follows, but I think Tom and I hit every single angle of this moving forward. Again, this will be the only question I ask. If they do draft J.J. McCarthy, if he stays healthy, is there a chance in your mind, if he plays well, that Daniel Jones could start every game in 2024?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they talked about that with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes when we were at the league meetings. I think it was I forget if it was Shane or Dable mentioned that, you know, that was an ideal situation for Mahomes to spend that year doing that, and sure worked out for them.
It'll be a lot of fun keeping the fans in check after a couple bad games with that. But yes, and I agree. I don't think that's a bad thing, to be honest with you. And if you're playing well and Daniel's playing well and you have a stable environment around them and you're able to kind of take the heat coming from the outside in, I don't think that's a bad way to do it.
I'm remembering now the conversation where that came up, because it was Joe Shane who talked about it, and he said that was the plan for Josh Allen in his rookie year too, and it lasted about a half because they had just seen enough and they were like, okay, throw the kid in there and let's roll with him.
Was that the six interception in a half performance by
Peterman?
Poor kid's name. Yeah, Nathan Peterman. I feel bad for that kid. He stole a punchline. Tom, good stuff. Tell the folks where they can find everything that you're doing and you're up to.
Newsday.com is the only place to find all of my stuff, Kim Jones's stuff, Ally in his own, who covers the Jets too. Newsday.com is the place to be.
Make sure you go check it out, folks. It's still one of the great papers out there, so make sure you go check it out at Newsday.com. For Tom Rock, for all of our reporters that did a fantastic job making their picks, hope you enjoyed our annual Giants Huddle reporter mock draft. It was easy on me. I only did 6 picks this year.
That's pretty good.
Last week I went all the way to 23. It took me a week to do those. It was a nightmare. So I don't like the bad record. It's not fun covering the bad record, but this is a benefit of the bad record for me when you get to April. For Tom Rock, I'm John Schmuck. Thanks for joining us on the Giants Huddle Podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. We'll catch you next time, everybody.